summer is just around the corner, and today we are talking to experts about grilling safety tips to ensure that you and your friends and family kick off the grilling season safely. We have Luis Delgadillo with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. He is the Public Affairs Specialist. Welcome to the show, Luis.
Hi. Well, thanks for having me.
So this is grilling season. It's just about to kick off, and from my understanding, an estimate 128,000 Americans are hospitalized with food poison each year.
That's right. You know, this is a, you know, part of our main mission with the USDA is to make sure that folks have meats and poultry items that are safe, wholesome, and accurately labeled. And unfortunately, some Americans do get sickened by foodborne illness, and we just want to take the guesswork out of food safety by providing some good tips for them.
In your information you provided, one thing that struck me was the type of tools that people need before they even begin thinking about grilling. Can you go over some of those tools?
Yeah, absolutely. The first one we would say is a food thermometer. You know, using a food thermometer is the only way to know that something is – using a food thermometer and making sure that something reaches the right temperature is the only way to make sure that meat, poultry, and egg dishes are safe. And the next item would be, you know, having cleaning supplies like paper towels or moist towelettes that are those antibacterial wipes. We recommend also having two sets of cooking utensils, things like tongs or spatulas or meat forks, because we want to make sure that you're using one for when you're handling the raw items and then the other for when you're handling the cooked or prepared items. And also, obviously, the plates and containers for cooked food items. You never really want to put cooked foods on the same plate that held raw meat or poultry.
I mean, it seems very basic, but I have to admit that I'm guilty of breaking one of the rules in regards to having the right proper tools, and that's two sets of cooking utensils.
Right. It's common. It's very common. And, you know, another thing that folks do is maybe if you're sitting out and it's a picnic or you're in your backyard grilling and you have some of the food dishes laid out already, one of the things that we might not do is change the spatulas out very often. And so sometimes those things will sit out a little bit too long. And, you know, back when I used to work in food service, we used to swap out those utensils regularly. And we would say recommend maybe doing that as well at home as well.
I'm glad you shared that because most people have that one set and they mix foods with the same spatula. So that's something I think that the average person would have never even thought about. It's having two sets of cooking utensils, which I think is very important now that you share that. And I know that thermometer that you mentioned, is that to go in every piece of food that you have? I'm a little confused about that.
Well, okay, so with a food thermometer, it's important to take the temperature of the raw meats after they're finished cooking on the grill to make sure that they're cooked to the safe minimum internal temperature. And that's to get rid of the bacteria that could potentially be on there. So, for example, for beef, pork, and lamb and veal steaks, the temperature that we recommend that you cook it to is 145 degrees, and that includes a 3-minute rest time. So you let it sit for 3 minutes, take the temperature, the meat should get to 145, and then after that we'd say it's safe. For ground meats, the temperature is ground beef meats, that's 160 degrees, and for whole poultry and, you know, things like chicken wings or chicken legs and things like that, it's 165 degrees Fahrenheit.
So just to be clear, are you suggesting that people individually put the thermometer in each piece of meat that's on the grill after it's been cooked?
That's right. So you have, say, for example, you have three or four steaks on the grill, and maybe they're at the same thickness, maybe they're not. And that's probably why that's exactly why we recommend each one being tested, because some meats are thicker than others. Some meats might take longer to get to the right temperature because of how they're, you know, how much marbling or how much fat they have in their meat cut. So knowing the temperature for each individual piece is important. And I know that can be tedious, but, you know, when it comes to food safety, it goes back to that estimated 128,000 Americans can be hospitalized or get sick by foodborne illness. So that's why it's so important. Another thing that I wanted to mention was that when it comes to the utensils, right, we talked a little bit about using two sets. And the reason why that's important is because we want to prevent something called cross-contamination. Now, cross-contamination is the thing that happens when we spread germs and bacteria around our food prep area or our grilling area because we use one set of utensils or tongs, for example, when you're using that one utensil and you're using multiple cuts of meat, you know, taking that those tongs into the raw dish, pulling the meat out, putting it on the grill, and then using that same utensil to take the cooked stuff off of and put it on the plate with the cooked foods, that's an easy way to cross-contaminate.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people who barbecue every day didn't realize how they were contaminating their food. Now, I want to go back to one thing that you mentioned. You talked about the temperature and the thermometer and making sure that the beef, pork, and lamb and the steaks and all of those roasts and chops are cooked at 145 degrees Fahrenheit with a 3-minute rest time. So just to be clear, are you suggesting that people individually put the thermometer in each piece of meat that's on the grill after it's been cooked?
That's right. So you have, say, for example, you have three or four steaks on the grill, and maybe they're at the same thickness, maybe they're not. That's exactly why we recommend each one being tested, because some meats are thicker than others. Some meats might take longer to get to the right temperature because of how they're, you know, how much marbling or how much fat they have in their meat cut. So knowing the temperature for each individual piece is important. And I know that can be tedious, but, you know, when it comes to food safety, it goes back to that estimated 128,000 Americans can be hospitalized or get sick by foodborne illness. So that's why it's so important.
Now, what is a 3-minute rest time? I don't think I've ever heard of that. And I've barbecued myself, and I've actually been to quite a few barbecues, and I'm not clear about when you say with a 3-minute rest time. Could you expound on that?
Well, typically during the three-minute rest, you know, oftentimes if you're the one at the grill, that 3-minute rest time happens in the time that it takes a person to get the meat that's off the grill back to the table. So people don't always think of it in terms of, oh, I'm going to start my clock. I'm going to go for 3 minutes. Okay, now take the temperature. It's one of those things that happens anyway. But what we want folks to do is be a little bit more deliberate when they're doing that, and so definitely have something to time that 3-minute rest. And what the 3-minute rest also does is allows the juices to settle a little bit and helps that meat become a little bit tastier. So you're doing two things. You're making your meat a little bit tastier if it's a whole cut of meat, and then you're also allowing that internal temperature, that heat that has already been on the outside of the meat cut, to get from the outside to the inside. Because as you're cooking a food item on the grill, heat's only impacting the outside of that meat product, right? So if you let it rest in a food container after it comes off the grill, that heat's still radiating or moving toward the center, and that's when you get that temperature bump up. So actually the temperature increases just a little bit on the inside when you pull meat off of the grill.
Interesting. Well, this has been a wealth of information. I have one more question. When you're grilling, especially with pork and beef and steaks, a lot of people like theirs medium rare, medium well. In regards to those cooking types, is that affected by how thorough the meat is cooked? I mean, could you give us a little bit more information about, is that a safety precaution that people need to keep in mind when grilling their steaks?
So this is probably going to be the most controversial thing that I bring up, but we do not use that color as an indication that something is safe to eat. We really solely rely on the temperature. And because a lot of folks are – that's a common thing that we hear in restaurants, we've brought that home to the home kitchen. So that's why when we hear people talk about, well, I like my stuff bloody, I like my stuff medium rare or rare, we're trying to move folks away from that line of thinking and in proposing of the temperature, 145 degrees internal temperature for cuts of beef, pork, and lamb steaks.
Now, the next thing that I would like to talk about is something that's near and dear to me. I come from a Southern family,
mm-hmm.
and once we cook our food, Louise, we like to let it sit over for days so it can marinate and the juices flow with the consistency of the food, because there's nothing like leftover chicken, beef, macaroni and cheese. Tell us a little bit about the USDA's recommendations for leftovers.
So I come from a pretty big family, and when we get together, we typically get together and we have a lot of food, people bringing dishes from far away and stuff. So the things that we try to focus on as far as food safety is concerned is making sure that if people are bringing dishes from far away, they're bringing them and packing them safely. So if they're cold items, they stay cold in a cooler. If they're hot items, that they're not sitting out for more than 2 hours at room temperature. And now we call that the danger zone. That's a range of temperature between 40 degrees and 140 degrees where bacteria could multiply rapidly. Because we're bringing dishes from far away, and then we're also setting them on a table, and then we're hanging out with family, we're watching the kids swim by the pool, or we're playing out in the park, those dishes, if they don't have like a hot or the cold source, like a chafing dish or a crock pot, they really are just sitting at room temperature. So that's where we would consider food items that are left out. You know, if they're left out beyond the 2 hours, then they become unsafe. So in order to avoid that, we recommend, you know, setting a serving time for foods, and then if you're not able to get those foods and get people through that food line, or, you know, maybe people are just coming late to the picnic or to the backyard barbecue, we recommend maybe getting those items back on ice, getting those perishable foods back on ice or in the refrigerator, and then reheating them for late arrivals.
Okay, wonderful. I'm glad you cleared that up because, like I said, down here in the South, we believe in some leftovers, so we need to know that we have a 3 to 4 day window in order for us to ensure that we eat those wonderful, delicious things that we've prepared, and we need to make sure that they are put away after about 2 hours.
Yes, yeah, so if they're sitting out, definitely put them away after 2 hours so that they go in the fridge. And if the barbecue's over, the picnic's over, and they've been held safely, we would recommend then getting them in the refrigerator, and then you can hold on to those leftovers, just like you mentioned, 3 to 4 days.
So now we've discussed food preparation in regards to grilling and meats and temperatures and utensils. Let's talk about that other side of barbecuing and grilling is, as we call it, the fixings.
Sure.
Can you talk about using safety precautions and safety tips for cutting and preparing foods that are not meat, but you're doing it outside?
So I would say that when it comes to some of those tips, following our 4 steps to food safety is probably the best way to go about it. So when it comes to the clean step, we call them our 4 steps of food safety, and those are clean, separate, cook, and chill, right? So the clean step would include making sure hands and surfaces are washed often, and even throughout the cooking process or the food preparation process, making sure we're washing our hands. The separate step is using separate cutting boards, one for fruits and vegetables. That way we're preventing, again, cross-contamination. And then the cook step, like I mentioned before, was about getting the items cooked to the right temperature. The chill step is the 2-hour rule, getting items in the refrigerator or the freezer if you're going to be holding on to them for a long time. Now, when it comes to getting stuff and holding stuff outdoors, like you mentioned, we want to make sure that we're using coolers if we're transporting raw items. And those raw items that we're transporting should have their own cooler, because when we get out to the picnic and get out into the field, we tend to have the beverages be the popular item because things get hot, temperatures can get up, you know, especially in the South, get up way above the 90s, and the humidity does not help. So people want to drink their drinks and get their stuff out of the cooler. So having the cooler for the perishables, so the raw meats, and then the cooler for the beverages is really important.
And I'm glad that you cleared that up because a lot of people don't really think about the 4 steps of preparation. Do you kind of have like a quick breakdown, like a quick, easy 1, 2, 3, 4 step for them to be able to remember those a little bit quicker?
Well, we would say clean, separate, cook, and chill.
Okay, perfect. I like that. Clean, separate, cook, and chill. So the 4 steps is very simple and very easy to remember. So I appreciate you sharing that. Now, one thing that I love that I'm sure a lot of people are not familiar with is that the USDA has a meat and poultry hotline. So if they have questions or if they have issues or concerns, they can call this number Monday through Friday from 10 to 6 Eastern Standard Time and actually speak with someone about their questions.
That's absolutely right. You know, we've been in service for more than 33 years now. And although we tend to get the most traffic to our hotline via phone calls through or around Thanksgiving time, we're actually here year-round. And we answer the calls in English and Spanish. And that the things that people will learn is they can learn some of the latest information about recalls, basic food safety tips, and they can also call and order some of the resources that we have available, things like what to do when the power goes out. We have a brochure on that. We have a brochure that's called the Kitchen Companion that promotes basic food safety guidelines in the kitchen as well.
I never knew that there was an actual hotline that I could call, so I'm glad. I know a shorter version of the number is 1-888-MP-HOTLINE, Meal Planning Hotline, MP Hotline, but they can also call if they like the numeric outline of it, 1-888-674-6854.
That's absolutely right.
One thing that I thought was kind of jazzy is you guys are actually on Twitter.
Yeah, you know, especially around the summertime, our at USDA Food Safety Twitter handle is extremely popular. And for the latest tips and news and things related to food safety, at USDA Food Safety is a great way to follow the food safety trends and the news. And that includes recall information.
Which is another big issue. I know there's been a lot of recall of different foods in regards to bacteria, E. coli with the lettuce. I know there was a report not too long ago about the beef in certain stores that was contaminated. Mm-hmm. So if people don't want to wait until it actually comes out in the news circuit, they can actually visit your website and get a jump start on different things that are occurring in regards to the quality of the meat in different places.
Yeah, so you can visit fsis.usda.gov. You can also visit an easier website to remember is foodsafety.gov, and also our Twitter handle has those news releases out immediately as well.
Now, if someone happened to prepare their food properly and they did get some sort of meat that had been linked to contamination, would cooking it at a higher temperature eliminate the bacteria, or is it something that does need to be disposed of immediately? Because some people feel like if they cook it at a higher temperature, it will help kill bacteria. But is that true?
That's a common misconception. It is not true. Cooking foods that you know to be contaminated for a longer time and a higher temperature is not a way to get them safe. You know, when it comes to the home cook, we try to have guidelines that protect them and manage risk at the best, you know, the best possible way. And if you know something's, you know, questionable, or if it's coming from a source that might have been involved in a recall, cooking it even if it's cooked to the right temperature for a long time is not something that's safe. So for items that are recalled, if you have a chance to take them back to the grocery store for a refund, that's what we would recommend, but definitely toss it and throw it away.
And one last question. Like I said, I come from a Southern family, and we love to have gatherings, and we cook, and we have that infamous deep freezer. We have meat from 5 years ago in the deep freezer because my family believes that if you freeze it, it is still good when it defrosts. Can you give us a little bit more information about the truth in that?
Well, I will side with the family on this one, because if you know that you have items that were in the freezer and you can verify that that freezer has not lost power and not lost sought out, or none of the items in that freezer have sought out, you can actually safely store meat items in the freezer indefinitely. Now, there's a caveat. It doesn't mean that the item is necessarily going to be delicious, because freezer burn and other food quality issues may come up as a result of long-term storage in the freezer. So that's why we recommend certain guidelines for holding foods in the freezer. Now, the USDA actually has a handy tool that you can download. It's called the Food Keeper, and it's available on the App Store from Apple, or it's on Google Play. And the Food Keeper gives safe storage guidelines in the freezer, in the pantry, and in the refrigerator for more than 500 food items.
That's amazing. Who would have known that? I'm so glad that we're able to talk to you and learn about these wonderful apps and tips and hotline numbers to utilize in order to ensure that we kick off a safety grilling season. And just to recap, can you go just through the information, the 1-800 hotline number that people can call, and the website and your link on Twitter?
So our Twitter handle is at USDA Food Safety, and we have almost 1.4 million Twitter followers. You can also call for any food safety-related information. You can call the Meat and Poultry Hotline at 1-888-MP-HOTLINE or 574-6854. And if you have questions about food recalls that you want to go on the web, you can visit foodsafety.gov.
We appreciate the time that you took to share with us great safety tips that we can take in preparing our food, storing our food, ensuring that the temperature is accurate and correct, and knowing about how long we can have those leftovers. We thank you so much for your time, Louise. I'm Amanda Cooper, and thank you for listening.